So I saw Gary Zeinhardt this morning, and as soon as I saw him, I knew that was a good news, bad news thing. So for many, the high school season's over. For about half the college teams, their season's over. The other half get to be in bowls. My Longhorns squeaked by the victory yesterday over the nationally ranked Baylor team, and well, they were using their fourth-string quarterback. He's actually a split-end receiver, and he took his first snaps as a quarterback on the sidelines before he went into the game. But we won. Go Longhorns. Hook 'em. So when Gail heard we were going with the second-string preacher, she skedaddled out of town, so she's not with us today. No, she went to Dallas for our grandson's first birthday. This article appeared in USA Today. A medical records clerk from Minnesota and the wife of a Maine man who mows lawns are among the latest to claim one-quarter shares of $300 million Powerball jackpot. Meanwhile, in Buxton, Maine, Pat and Irwin Wales say they'll buy a pickup to replace their 11-year-old truck with 160,000 miles. Thanks to her, they'll be able to pay cash. Pat Wales bought 5 tickets in New Hampshire and was watching the drawing on TV when the winning numbers popped up. She woke her husband and broke the news. "Great," he said, and fell back to sleep. Gambling's a big deal. It's a $100 billion business in the U.S. Fantasy football is embroiled in scandals now. They have players from one fantasy. They have employees from one fantasy league using their information to play fantasy football on another league. And the fantasy football in general is trying to prove that it's a game, it's skill involved, and it's not based upon luck. And so we're going to talk about gambling today. I wanted to see what you thought. Who thinks Christians should not gamble? Raise your hand. Wow, that was a very low percentage. Who thinks it's okay for Christians to gamble? Okay, who thinks Christians should gamble? Okay, me and the young people, okay. Who thinks God's a gambler? Raise your hand. Who thinks God never gambles? Okay, very brave there. Well, let's see. Well, the Bible really doesn't use the word gambling. So you can say it's not in the Bible. The 11 disciples, they cast lots to find the 12th. Casting lots, kind of like it's a game of chance, of luck. It's like rolling the dice. So the disciples did it. Let's see what the Bible says about gambling. Jesus is the master teacher. Now, we read from Luke 19. In Luke 18, right before that, Jesus tells the several parables. The parable of the persistent widow who... the owner of the house attends to her, not because he's a kind and compassionate man, because just to get her off his back, because she keeps knocking on the door, and finally he decides to answer the door. Then he tells the parable of Pharisee and the tax collector, and the tax collector is a scoundrel, and he sits at the back of the church building and says, "I don't even deserve to look up to you, God." And the Pharisee says, "Man, I do so many things right. Isn't it great that I'm here? One of them is justified before God, and the other is not." Then he has the little children. He says, "Be like a child, be pure like a child." And then he has an encounter with the rich young ruler, and he walked away sad. He thought he was doing everything right, and surely he was qualified to be part of Jesus' gang. And so after he gets done with these parables and encounters, who can embody all of these in one person? God often chooses the most improbable and unlikable people and circumstances to fulfill his mission. So who's the person that he would choose to represent these parables? Well, it wasn't one of the 12 disciples. He rarely uses his disciples as an example to look towards. He didn't choose a religious leader. He didn't even choose a religious man. He didn't choose a popular, charismatic leader. In fact, this person was very unpopular. He was despised, a traitor. He was an interpersonal disaster, a social pariah. He was a social leper of that time. And Jesus chose the most inauspicious, unimpressive man. And he wasn't even physically impressive. He was a runt. He was a shorty. Zacchaeus was hated by the Jews. He's a traitor. Now, in concentration camps during World War II, the most despised people were not the prison guards, but the Jews who worked in collaboration with the guards. They were the most despised because they were one of us and they went over the other side. He was one of them, Zacchaeus, but he's working for the Romans. He was, in fact, a chief tax collector. It's the only time this word is used in the New Testament. He supervised all the tax collectors, and basically tax collectors were extortionists at that time. So the Jericho Chamber of Commerce gets together and says, okay, we've got to get the reception ready for this guy. Who are we going to choose? And there's a lot of planning that goes into receptions. When the Pope visited three cities, and it cost over $200 million for him to visit three cities. For the city of Philadelphia, it cost over $50 million for the Pope to spend a day or two there. However, his visit generated more than $400 million for the city of Philadelphia. So maybe we can get the Pope to visit El Campo. Had there been a reception committee for Jesus, the last person in the entire city of Jericho they would have chosen would have been Zacchaeus. He didn't go to all the other houses. Zacchaeus was less popular than Jerry Jones at a Tom Landry family reunion. In fact, he was so despised that when the folks got together for coffee at Whataburger, he was the butt of their jokes. When the rabbis told stories of the bad guy was always Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus' name means justified or pure. And that's interesting given his line of work. So Jesus chooses a man who made the citizen's life a living hell to show paradise to the city. He chose the most hated man in the city to show God's love. He showed the most tight-fisted man in the whole city to show how generous God is. He chose the most hopelessly lost man in the city to show salvation. He left the 99 to save the one. This is the second time that God takes over Jericho. The first time was to destroy it. This time's to save it. And so, and this is one of our favorite stories. All the kids, I hope, know the story of Zacchaeus and the first story of Jericho. And we have a song for it. Josh fit the battle of Jericho. Sorry, I promised I wouldn't lead singing from the pulpit. Jericho, Jericho, Josh fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Why isn't there not a song, Zacchaeus saved the city of Jericho? Because that's what he did. So God visits Jericho for a second time, but for a different purpose. Here's a guy who doesn't care about what people think of him. Here's a grown man who climbs up in a tree to watch the El Campo parade. And there's a grown man, a businessman, and he's up in a tree, and he doesn't care that people are making fun of him. He's persistent, like the widow. And Karl Barth said, purity of heart is to desire one thing. He was so bent on seeing Jesus that he'd do anything he absolutely had to do to see him. And in verse 5, Jesus said two amazing things. Zacchaeus, wait a second. How did he know his name? Surely he'd never met him before. How would he know Zacchaeus' name? And he called him out of the whole crowd. And the second amazing thing he says is, I must stay at your house. He didn't say, I want to stay. Could I stay? He says, I need to stay at your house. Jesus needed to stay at his house. Jesus had a need. How did this happen? He knew his name and he had to stay at his house. And in verse 6 and 7, it's amazing. Zacchaeus came down. He obeyed him and welcomed him gladly. And then the people start complaining about him. Not Zacchaeus complaining about Jesus. And they start griping because he stayed at the home of a scoundrel. He went to his house. Wait. We got the mayor here, the whole Chamber of Commerce, they're lined up. And we got all the prominent businessmen, and you're going to go to his house? They muttered and they griped, they complained, they nagged, and Jesus ignored them. Jesus didn't do something. Surprising. Gripers can't set our course. I like this verse. Everyone who saw the incident was indignant and grumped. What business does he have getting cozy with this crook? And then Zacchaeus is transformed. He stands up in the middle of the festivities and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Probably for the first time in his life, he joined those two words, "I give." He's probably said, "I want," and he's probably said, "You give," but he's probably never said, "I give." This is the IRS, folks. This is the IRS. They only give what you deserve. And he's generous and he's happy. And he says, "I give." It was considered extremely generous to give 1/5 of your possessions to the poor. And Zacchaeus gives half. Repayment for extortion was normally about the amount of money plus 20%, and he gives 4 or 5 times that amount. He didn't make a confession of faith. He didn't say, "I accept Jesus Lord as my Savior, and I want to be baptized." He didn't say that. He was transformed, and this giving was proof of his transformation. And so right after that, Jesus says what? "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham." If you ask the entire city, who is a son of Abraham, this guy would not make the list. Jesus, you didn't do the background check on this guy. He's a scoundrel. We hate him. Everyone hates him. How can you love someone that everyone hates, Jesus? But he showed it with his money, his faith. Money is kind of a neutral thing. I'd like to have a lot more of that neutrality, but it is neutral. A study was done by CNN. They interviewed people, lottery winners, and in general, it ruined their lives and it ruined their friendships. Most lottery winners not only spend all their money, they go into debt. They have less money after they win the lottery than before, and they have less friends. See, once you have a lot of money, who is your friend? And lottery winners have lots of friends. High school buddies, grade school teachers start calling up. It ruins their life. Well, the Harvard business professor, Michael Norton, did an experiment. In their research, they wanted a campus in Vancouver and gave college students envelopes. And some of the envelopes, it said, "Take this money and spend it on yourself." To others, it was, "Take this money and spend it on someone else." Then they gathered all the response. They came back and says, "Well, how do you feel now that you spent that money, either on someone else or yourself?" And in general, those who spent it on themselves, there was really no change. "I was fine. I bought a tie I didn't need. I went to Starbucks." A lot of them went to Starbucks. However, the ones who spent their money on someone else, they came back happier. They came back feeling more fulfilled. That was a great experience for me to give away. And irregardless of the money, if it was $5 or $20 or $50, it was the act of giving that enriched their lives. And so they took it a step further. They took it to Uganda and they took it to other cities in the U.S. And it proved, irregardless of culture or what they were spending the money on, to help someone's medical bills or to just give them a little gift, whoever gave spending their money turned out better. Whoever spent it on themselves, it really made no difference. And so Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. But that's a little hard to believe. And so two men woke up that day, Zacchaeus and Jesus. How did he know Zacchaeus' name? Did Jesus, in his quiet time, hear from God that day, you're gonna go to this town, and I want you to pick out Zacchaeus. I want you to not sign autographs, nor do miracles, just have dinner at his house. And he's going to be the principal convert. This is my plan to save Jericho. And apparently Jesus obeyed. Apparently Jesus obeyed. That's my conclusion. I could be making some of that up, but how did he know his name and to call him and to say, I'm going to have dinner at your house? Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. So in Zacchaeus, we have the fulfillment of the parable. So we have the rich young ruler who goes to church and he says, how are things going? Great. What have you done right? Everything. Have you checked off the list? I made up the list that's longer than your list, Jesus, and I checked them all off. I've done everything right. Here I am. And here's Zacchaeus, a scoundrel, despised by the entire city. And he's the living flesh of the tax collector in the story. And so we ask, is God a gambler? You betcha he is. I bet money on that God's a gambler. He took a gamble. He took a gamble. There's two sides of God. He's faithful, unchanged, trustworthy, and predictable. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's always there. You can predict what he's going to do. At the same time, he's surprising, improbable, unexpected, and unpredictable. He's a gambler. He doesn't do what we want him to do. He doesn't do what we think he should do. He doesn't choose the people we think he should choose. In our relationship with the people outside the church, the good news in a Gallup poll was that 82% of Americans are looking for spiritual intimacy. 4 out of 5 Americans are looking for spiritual intimacy. The bad news, less than 10% of Christians make friends with non-believers. There was only one way to save Jericho, and that was to show, I'm going to pick the lowest, the most unlovable, the most improbable to show my generosity and my power. And it changed his life forever. A lot of people look like Zacchaeus on the outside. We may not like them. A lot of people may not like them, but they may be exactly the person that God wants Jesus to meet. Is God a gambler? You betcha. And when God gambles, he bets on long shots. He bets on the one that all of society only gives them a 1 in a million chance to make it, or to do well, or to get something done, or to be God's servant. And when God bets, he goes all in. All the chips. Everything he's got, he doesn't hold back. He bets it all. He bets his son on it. And he often chooses people we would never choose. And it's through that process that it becomes obvious who's the better, who's the one who invested. And when you choose the most despicable, extortionist enemy, you get to see God's love and generosity. We need to be God's servant to those people. Just like Jesus walked into Jericho and said, Zacchaeus, I must go to your home. I must have a fellowship meal with you. We must do that. Our conversion continues. The generosity of God goes through us. So you may be the most despicable person in your group. Maybe no one likes you. Maybe you feel like no one likes you. Business is tough. Whatever's going on in your life, that's the person that Jesus walks up to and says, Bill, Sue, John, I must be with you. So if things aren't going well, that's exactly who God walks up to. And that's exactly who God's going to use to reach others. God is a wealthy, compulsive gambler. He bets against the odds, and he always wins. He always wins. So there are no losers in the kingdom. Now, there are a lot of losers who gamble. There have to be people who lose in order for people to win. And the house has to win also. When God goes all in on us, we become winners, and we become generous, and it's infectious. It's infectious. And so if you're here today and you feel like you're the Zacchaeus in your school, in your business, here at church, in your family, you're not the most popular person, but you like to be. Jesus is coming to your house in the morning, at night,